Harmony. Harmony is something that everyone would like in their lives, something everyone would like in their affairs, something that everyone would like in the world, something that everyone would like. Harmony is just a lovely, gentle, fabulous, super-duper word. How do we bring harmony into our life? How do we bring harmony into our affairs? How do we bring harmony into our body? How do we bring, well, let's start with our body. That's a good one. How do we bring harmony in our body? Say our body is experiencing an ache or a pain or something like that here or there. How do we bring harmony in our body? Well, we take a pill, right? Wrong. We can, but it doesn't matter. We have had thoughts that have been inharmonious, and therefore we don't have harmony in our body. Now, you don't know what those thoughts are. The doctor doesn't know what those thoughts are. Nobody really knows that you've had these thoughts. You're such a pure, beautiful, dynamic, fabulous lady, such a fantastic person, you know, that surely you would never think any thought that might limit you. But we do. And the thought might just be, ah, I'm tired, you know. And you don't say that. Ah, I'm ready for a good night's sleep. I've had a wonderful day. I've had an exciting, wonderful day. You don't have to say, I'm tired. You don't have to enunciate any of those things which are not your choice. In fact, we could stay up all night. We could stay up all day. We could be a shining example of sleeplessness if we wished. But not sleeplessness with all of the things that they say come with sleeplessness. But just sleeplessness without needing sleep. And we could also not need water, we could not need air, and all these other good things. That sounds great, doesn't it? But we're not there. We're not there by a long shot. But we can clean up what we have. So, if our body is giving us an inharmonious feeling, we say to our body, I love you. I love you. Can you speak inharmonious about someone you love? Can you speak inharmoniously about someone, something that you love? No. It is part of our nature to always speak harmoniously about everything that is important to us, everything that we love, everything we like, everything we enjoy. So, if you tell your body, which is acting up a little bit, you say, hey, body, I love you. And take it, kiss the arm or kiss the foot or kiss, and hey, you can't reach your bottom, so you take your, put a kiss on your bottom with your hand, you know how you pass a kiss along like that. Your body knows. And then, ah, yes. Ah, yes. How many days, how many times a day, or how many days a week, a month, how many days in a year, have you taken yourself and given yourself a big, fat love affair? Just love the bejabbers out of yourself. Just hugged yourself and said, I love you, I love you, I love you. And just be silly. I love you, I love you, I love you. How many times a week, let's be generous, have you said that? Now, I venture to guess that none of you have said this since our last seminar when I was promoting it. Yeah, Ellen says, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But Ellen, are you doing it every day? No. Are you doing it once a week? Okay. So, you see, it's not very often that we're doing it. We are just not doing it like we could. But now, Ingeborg, you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, okay, Ingeborg, take this pill. And you say, yes, sir. And you come home and take the pill. But do you tell your body, hey, body, I'm going to put a pill in you now. And the pill is what the doctor says I need. But I love you so much. I don't need that pill, but I'm going to take it. Now, you just use whatever you can from it and pass the rest through. Don't let it disturb me in the slightest. I don't need to have any limitations from the pills the doctor gives me, you know. I don't need to have any limitations. Can you talk to yourself like that? Can you say to your body, all of you from time to time have an experience that you don't like in your body, and you either go to the doctor or you take a pill or you do something, you know. All of us, we do that. Now, have we said to our body, hey, body, I like you. Now, This may be true of the Jews. I don't know. I have heard a comment that it might be true, but it's a beautiful thing. Only the Jewish priests are allowed to kill the pork or the various meats that the Jews eat. And they must take the animal and hang him up by his feet and slit his throat and let the blood drain out and bless the animal. First they say to the animal, my goodness, with all the Jews in the world, they must have a lot of priests working for these meat factories, you know. But they must say to the animal, I love you, I bless you. Would you mind giving up your life for me? It's already foredrawn, it's going to do it, but would you mind? I'm taking your life because we need you for food. And we love you, we bless you. And, you know, they say nice things. I don't know what the ritual is, but it's something like that. And it's beautiful. And then they hit the animal over the head, bonk, and he's unconscious, and then he slit his throat. So they're not slitting his throat while he's conscious. He's unconscious. And then when all the blood is drained away, then it is a kosher food. It is a kosher meat. And it is special just for the Hebrews, just for the Jews, for people who choose to eat this very blessed meat by the priests. Now you say, really? That's quite something. Yes, it is. Now, whether it's universally true, I don't know. I worked for Armour Meatpacking Company, and while I worked there, the people, I went around to the various departments and saw how they made things and how they did things. Ellen, get the loaf of bread, bring it to the table with the butter, please. And I asked her to do something, and you just let me ask her. And and that's harmony. So if nobody uses it, that's fine. But Ellen, Ingeborg was looking at the basket of bread here, which is empty.
There was an ant running
on it. Oh, and there was an ant running on it, and she wanted to make sure the ant didn't get into the bread that wasn't in the bread dish. So, but that's okay. That's okay. That was very thoughtful, very loving. So now, if you feel inclined, the bread is there, and the butter is there, and the jam is there, and the peanut butter is there, you can have another piece if you want. Isn't that wonderful? So, that's perfect harmony. That's perfect harmony. How many times a day do you surround your body with your arms and say, I love you? Do you do it every night before you go to bed? You say, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. You're the greatest body in the world. I love you. Hey, you better say it's the greatest body in the world. It's the one you got, you know? It's the one you got. You understand? It's the one you got. And if it is not too good, still bless it and love it. And say, now, let's get to work on this part that's not functioning too well here. Let's see it whole and perfect. Now, I see you whole and perfect. Now, if it's one leg, you look at the other good leg. I said to one woman on the phone the other day who was complaining about her body having something, and I said, is there any place on your body that is beautiful? She says, yes. I said, well, look at that. Look at that and think of that for your whole body. She says, but that's not easy. I said, look past it, look past it. And you see, if I had told her, put her arms around herself and love herself, she would have probably said, oh, good, I'll do that. And let me ask you, would she do it? You think she would, but I think she wouldn't. Now, why do I think she wouldn't? Because she wouldn't do it immediately. If she did it immediately, she'd have the feeling of it. And then she'd remember to do it otherwise. But if you just don't do it immediately and then you do it when you get around to it, you forget it too easily. Look at you guys. You know the principle of hugging yourself. You know the principle of hugging others. You know what a hug does for the world, you know. And it's wonderful. Now, do you think the French are such happy people and in love with their bodies and in love with their world because they don't know how to love? I mean, they kiss everybody on both cheeks. They don't just kiss one cheek. They kiss both. And they're supposed to be real, real sultry lovers, if I can use that word. And they're quite healthy people, aren't they? You don't hear the French as being ill. I'm sure they have their normal little illnesses, but basically you don't hear of the French. If they are, they don't tell anybody. And how wonderful that is. Now, you say, well, Herb, I know in France, in every major city, is a large hospital. And I know that these hospitals have people in them. That's why they're there. And I know that those, yeah, look. Let's go to every major city in France. Every major city. And let's say there's 30 of them, okay? Mm-hmm. More? Less? 30. Okay, 30. How many beds could each hospital normally have if they were a good-sized hospital? Would you say 100, 200, 500? Mm-hmm. That's a lot. Say 500, be generous. 30 times 500 is what? 15, what? 1,500.
15,000.
Yeah. 15,000. Well, now, what are 15,000 people out of the population of France? What is the population of France? Population of France is maybe 20 million. Just taking a guess. Maybe 50. The more, the better, you know. But if it's just, say, 15 million, so 15,000 out of 15 million is kind of tiny. And 15,000 out of 20 million is even tinier. And 15,000 out of 50 million, which it may well be. But you see, what I'm trying to tell you, the minority are not hugging themselves. They're not loving themselves. They're not saying, my body is the temple of the living God. They're not saying, I like my body. I like my body. I'm in harmony with my body. They're not saying that. But the rest of them surely must be doing that because their body acts well. Hey, you got a problem with your body? I don't have problems with my body. Hey, you have any illness? I haven't time for illnesses. You know, whatever they say. I've read a lot of stories about French people, but they are not representative. And the reason they're not representative is because they just represent an interesting story, not the rest of the population, you follow that? They don't represent at all the population. They may maybe about 0.1% of the population. Because if everybody had that interesting story, the story wouldn't be interesting to everybody. If you write about everyday life in the home of most people and how harmonious it is and how happy it is and how healthy it is and how fulfilled it is, who wants to read that? Really? Who wants to read that? Nobody. And the reason they don't want to read it is because that's what they're experiencing. That's what their life is. You see, harmony is not a foreign term or word to us. It's a very common term and a common word. When Anita walks into her house and her mother says, Anita! Is that harmony? You bet. When Anita walks into her house and she thinks, ah, nice vibrations here. This was our home. This is where I lived. And that's nice. I think that's wonderful. When Anita goes over to her sister's house, what does she think? She thinks, wow, what fun vibrations there are here. So many different activities, so many different things. She goes over to her other sister's house, and what does she find there? More fun, right? Yeah. Wherever she goes, she finds this because it's her, and also because that's what they are. That's what they are. Harmonious, fun, happy. Yeah. You see, this is what it's all about. This is what our life is all about. Our life is all about harmony. Okay, so much for harmony of the body. If you apply that, you have a wonderful body experience. And you say, Herb, why go further? That sounds good to me. It is. Okay, now what about harmony in your affairs? If you see anything in your affairs which are inharmonious, look first in yourself. And when you look in yourself, you will see this is pretty bad. Okay, now, so you're the boss of IBM. Let's say you're not the boss of IBM. Let's say you're the boss, you're the foreman of a group of 200 men and women, okay? That's more realistic. You're the foreman of 200 men and women. You walk into the office, into the plant, and grumpy, grumpy, grumpy. What's everybody going to be? Grumpy, grumpy, grumpy. You walk in with a smile on your face and a sort of an interesting-looking grin, like you know something nobody else knows, and they're all going to be curious as can be to find out what it is you know that everybody else doesn't know. And they're going to be happy, and they're going to be coming around saying, hey, boss, you had that great smile on your face. What was that all about? What were you thinking about, you know? And the boss says, oh, I heard a little secret this morning. I'll tell you at 3 o'clock. oh, why wait till 3 o'clock? Why wait till 3 o'clock? We want to know now. And of course, they're just all eager. And they know it's good because he had the smile on his face. If he had a frown on his face, I'll tell you at 3 o'clock, you're all fired. And that's what people would think, you know. But with a smile on his face, they say, it's got to be something good. Why do we have to wait? Right? Well, harmony in your organization. Harmony in your world. He made it. He had the smile on his face. He had the impression. True, those people worked for him, and they were very close to him, very interested in what he was doing. But you walk down the street with a smile on your face, and the same thing will happen to you. You'll surround yourself with people who think to yourself, wow, what's that guy got to smile about? That's beautiful, you know? Do it. Do it. It's wonderful. It's wonderful when you can be master of yourself. And when you're master of yourself, then you're master of your world. And then everybody in your world is great. So if you look at anybody in your world that they're not doing something for you, that they're not being loving and gentle and kind and pure and wonderful, hey, look inside yourself and say, what am I shining out? Okay, then you start shining out this honesty and this goodness and this purity and this wonder. And pretty soon it starts flooding back to you because they are mirrors. They are merely mirrors. They are merely mirrors they are mirrors that shine back. Not merely, but they are mirrors that shine back whatever we're thinking. Whatever we're reflecting in our charisma, whatever we're reflecting in our thought, in our way of acting, people respond to that. A beautiful man who looks like an executive and wears clothing like an executive and is an executive, but he has a bad image or bad charisma or something of himself, he walks into a group of people who don't know him and they don't have to respect him. Do they respect him? No. His clothes don't make people respect him. His outer attitude doesn't make people respect him. It's his inner charisma that makes people respect him. If he were a dynamic, not necessarily vibrant, outgoing person, but a dynamic, powerful, believing in himself person, he would walk or she would walk into a group of people, and that group of people would instantly turn toward her just because they'd have to, and would say, hi, you know, who are you? Where are you from? You know, are you one of the executives of the firm here? No, I'm the scullery maid. I'm the sweeper. Oh, well, you are gorgeous. You know, your clothing is I don't really have too many places to wear this, so I thought I might as well wear it to work and enjoy it. Oh, my, you are beautiful. And what happens? Next thing you know, she's invited upstairs. And she says, but I don't want to go upstairs. I like doing my job. It's no responsibility. I just clean the floors and I just dust and things like that. I'm happy doing this. It's wonderful. But you have such pizzazz, such savoir-faire. You have such magnificence, such chutzpah, you know. You're fantastic. That's a good word. You're fantastic. And if you would just let yourself go, you could do anything. But I don't know these things. Hey, sweetheart, let me tell you something. You don't have to know anything. You just have to be a good leader and have good followers who know all about it and have them do it. All you have to do is know how it's supposed to look when it's done. And then they have supervisors among them that'll tell them what to do. You're the overall. And you're the department manager. And so you just make sure that the work gets out. With your personality, you go in there, and everybody in that group will say, Whoa, boy, I can't do enough for this organization. This is such a smooth place to work. You come here, and you have a smile on your face, and you leave here, you got a smile on your face. You got a smile on your face all day long. Wow, this is wonderful. Yeah, what a great place to work. Hey, I don't want to change jobs. I got an offer at a better job at, you know, like maybe $1, $10 an hour or more or something like that. I don't want to change because I don't know what sort of attitude I'm going to run into up there. But, hey, then, if you are any kind of boss, you will say to your staff, you're happy here because I'm happy here. You're my creation. Now, as you continue in your home and in your world, and you created me being happy too, as you continue in your home and your world and so with your family and your friends and your neighbors and the school district and the card clubs and selling them, you take with you this attitude, and it's for sale, free. You know, and the attitude says, I like me. I'm harmonious with my world. Everybody loves to do things with me. Everybody loves to help me. Everybody loves to work with me. This woman who would walk in after being just a sweeper, just, I mean, that's a low-paying job, after being on that low-paying job being a sweeper, moved on upstairs. At first, she was caught off balance. My goodness. But she was so ingenuous. She was so innocent, so naive, so fantastically joyful and innocent. It was just a marvelous experience for everybody upstairs to experience her. They thought, surely she must have taken this job at a lower level than her real talents are, merely to bring this office in line. And, in effect, that's what she did. Because the office began to run smoothly within 1 week, and their output had increased by 20% in 1 week. Less time at the water cooler. It increased 20% in 1 week. And the boss says, wow, we're moving you upstairs, see? But this is what you do when you create harmony. This is what she did. She was a living example of loving herself, believing in herself, being a happy lady. She didn't need anybody to applaud her. She lived it from the charisma of her being. Now, where does your charisma come from? Think about it. What? You want to say something? Your charisma comes from your attitude, pure and simple. If you have a great attitude, your charisma will show it. If you don't have a great attitude, your charisma will show it. Okay, so much for working with our universe, I mean our immediate world and your family, the same thing in your family. If you walk home with a smile on your face, the family says, ah, goody, mommy's happy, daddy's happy, wonderful, you know, and everything's in order, you know. Oh, when mom's got a smile on her face like that, she's a pushover. Let's go ask her what we want to ask her, you know. And mom is not a pushover. Mom pretends that she is. She lets them think that she is. And she says, all right, I think that's a good idea. You really should go to the show tonight. But before you go to the show tonight, I want you to go upstairs before supper and clean up your rooms. So when I come up, your rooms are spick and span. Everything's put away. Everything's in order. And I want you to go in the backyard and clean up the backyard. Put all your toys and all your miscellaneous things that have been laying around out there. And you left your coat on the swing and so forth, you know. And bring in the balls and put them in the toy box. And so these are older kids, but they still have the toy area in the backyard. And she says, but then you can go to the show. That's fine. Oh, Mom, you always make us do something first. Well, I don't make you do anything first. If you would put your toys away when you're done using them, if you would keep your clothes put away as you have agreed to do but have not been doing, I wouldn't have to tell you, and I wouldn't have to barter with you. I would maybe barter with you to say, all right, you go to the show tonight, but I want better grades in school tomorrow. Okay? But you see, working with your family, that's just a few illustrations, can be, you know, legion, can be fun. Now, let's take the bigger picture. We could take our nation, we could take the various nations of the world, but let's take something like world peace. We talked about world peace often. Our harmonious self leads to world peace. So Ellen is in the grocery store. And a man is standing behind her in line, and he's reading the headlines of the paper, and he says, oh, isn't that terrible, that war in Afghanistan? And Ellen turns to him and says, what war in Afghanistan? Well, don't you see here there's a war in Afghanistan? All these people are being killed. And Ellen says, really? Well, think about it. Are you part of the problem or part of the solution? Am I part of the problem or part of the solution? If I see these people, if I read the newspaper, I'm part of the problem. I'm adding to the exacerbation of the problem. I'm making the problem grow and grow and grow and grow like a cancer. And think of all the people who read these newspapers. They're doing the same thing. And they're nice people. They're really nice people. They don't want war in Afghanistan. They don't want unhappiness. But they name it. They name that it's there. They empower it. All they'd have to do is say, there now is peace in Afghanistan. All is in divine order in Afghanistan. All is in divine order on all the nations surrounding Afghanistan. They are one glorious, harmonious community of people. What would happen when you do something like that, and then she hears you, and she does it, and then she tells her, or says it to her, and do you, and the world around and around, and pretty soon, all over the face of the earth, people begin thinking happiness. I had a newspaper in Newark, California, and I used to just love to go and get the happiness stuff. We'd have auto accidents and things like that. I thought, the heck with it. The dailies would cover that. But I would go out and I'd get, I went to people's homes and did the ordinary stuff, you know, the happiness stuff. But I would go and get the Job's Daughters and flash them out, full page on the front of the paper, you know, all these girls. And all their moms and dads lived in our community. then on the inside, I'd run a whole series of them. And I'd run some news and then advertising. But it was such a love sheet. That's what everyone called it. The Newark Sun, the love sheet. The alias of Newark, you know. The son of alias, the son of Newark. So, as I did this, the whole community changed. It was a in-between community, half technical people and half working people, laboring people in the various plants that were there. And none of the hoi polloi, none of the big money bucks, because they lived across the bay or they lived in the very posh communities around there. But this was just a nice working class community and a little better than working class. And so all the people there, I talked to their employers. And all the people there slowly developed a feeling of peace and love and happiness inside themselves. And then as I went and talked to different employers for getting ads and other things from them, they say, well, you know, we don't really need to advertise because we have the most loyal, wonderful people working here you could ever want. We have beautiful people. They want to be long-term people. They want to be staying with us a long time. And I say, hey, that's great. And one time they had a strike, which was before we really got known in the community. We just bought the paper and got started a little bit before, Faith and I. And so I sent Faith over to interview the Peterbilt company, which was having a strike. And it was not a very nice strike. And they wanted many things, and the union wasn't getting it for them, and the employer wasn't getting it for them. And so we surrounded them with love. We surrounded them with our pure white light of love. We said, all is in divine order. We said, everything is harmonious. And then what did we do? Then Faith went over and did an interview with the company, with the president. And by the time they were striking outside, and by the time she walked out the front door, the striking had finished. And he said, Mrs. Byerly, now you have something to report. She says, I always knew that. She says, I always knew that they would come to terms and the strike would end harmoniously for everybody. But it wasn't ending that way. You were not part of the interview, the part of the negotiations about the strike. And so therefore, you didn't say, but, because they all said, yes, 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 let's work together. And he said, wow, yes. And Faith is very strong on some of that stuff. And so the strike was over, and the community was brought together by their own harmony, their own peace. We did our part, but the message came to them because they all read our paper. It was just a little rag, and they loved reading it, and we loved putting it out. But it was fun. It was fun. Now, peace on earth, same thing. It doesn't matter what it is. We're the master. All we do is say, now there is peace on earth, and then there is peace on earth. Are we ready to be masters of harmony? To be masters of harmony means first we're master of ourselves. We're master of harmony about ourselves. We put our arms around ourselves and love ourselves. Then we reach out and love our family and snuggle them. We reach out and snuggle our community symbolically if necessary. And then we reach out and snuggle the world definitely symbolically. And we reach out and we embrace everybody and we say, you're all good and very good. And I see you in perfect harmony now. And you know, they are. Isn't it wonderful? I love you.